President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. When we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this November the 22nd on the West Coast, and now November the 23rd on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network. Got to spend 2 hours with you today, talking about all of this TSA stuff. Drew Raines and I had determined we were only going to spend 5 minutes on the topic, and we actually did 2 hours with even more to say about it. But as we're pointing out to you, seems to be a false flag event in real time all the way across the country, sort of retribution for how people voted in the most recent midterm election. I didn't hear the final figures. I had heard it may be as high as 65 or 66 non-democratic candidates were put into office. I don't know the actual breakdown, how many of those may have been independent or libertarian Tea Party types, but the Republicans quickly claimed a victory, and they credited their Republican Tea Party. Let us not confuse the fact that that even though these people may be conservative, it doesn't make them Republican. As often as we say this on Evident Footprints, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are simply two sides of the same coin. And you can look at the amount of kickbacks, bribes that are paid out for their votes on a variety of issues, and you can see that that is true. I want to digress for a moment and bring you back to something. I found a song that makes a comment about this, and we need to be thinking along these lines. First, I'm going to play a clip that I've played before. This features the hearings about the potential transporting or deployment of some 8,000 Marines on Guam, and it was alleged that there were going to be about 17,000 dependents going there, increasing the population of Guam by 25,000 people. And this was the discussion between the commanding admiral who is discussing this with Democratic representative from the state of Georgia, Hank Johnson.
Now, this is a island that at its widest level is, what, 12 miles from shore to shore, and at its smallest level location, it's 7 miles between one shore and the other. Is that correct?
I don't have the exact dimensions, but to your point, sir, I think Guam is a small island.
Very small island, and about 24 miles, if I recall, long. So 24 miles long, about 7 miles wide at the least widest place on the island, and about 12 miles wide on the widest part of the island. And I don't know how many square miles that is. Do you happen to know?
I don't have that figure with me, sir. I can certainly supply it to you if you'd like.
Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize?
We don't anticipate that. The Guam population, I think, currently about 175,000, and again, with 8,000 Marines and their families, it's an addition of about 25,000 more into the population.
And also things like the environment, the sensitive areas of the environment, coral reefs and those kinds of things. And I know that, you know, lots of people don't like to think about that, but, you know, we didn't think about global warming either. And now we do have to think about it. And so I'm concerned from an environmental standpoint whether or not Guam is the best place to do this relocation, but it's actually the only place. Is that correct?
This is the best place. This is the farthest west U.S. territory that we own. And, this is part of our nation. And in readdressing the forward presence and posture importance to Pacific Command, Guam is vital to this decision.
Isn't it amazing that a blind man, Stevie Wonder, or as he's known by his birth name, Steve Lynn Morris from Detroit, Michigan, had the vision to see the problems some 25 or more years ago and write about it in a song and have it be every bit as true today. Speaking of true, it's time to bring our guest on. He is a PhD and a naturopathic doctor. He's written many articles, given lectures around the world, has a radio show called The Story Behind the Story on themicroeffect.com, and he's our regular Monday night guest here on Evident Footprints. I welcome back my good friend and yours, Dr. A. True Ah. True, welcome to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure, Don. Good evening again to you and your listening audience, wherever you may be. I'm sitting here literally trying to keep warm. I feel like I'm in an igloo, like I'm an Eskimo tonight. It's amazingly cold here in North
global
Idaho.
Warming. What happened to the global warming?
I discussed this on my show today. If even a fraction of what Al, an Inconvenient Truth Gore, happened to say, we shouldn't be facing plummeting records of This is here in northern Idaho on the 22nd, 23rd of November. It's never been this bone-chilling cold. The mercury's dipping down to 17 below, and that's not even counting the wind chill.
Yeah, I was speaking with a friend from Washington State this week, and they got a blast of cold air, and we are... I'm just getting a message that the first couple of minutes of the show didn't stream for some reason, but we're okay right now, I guess. So I got the message. Thank you, Seth. Anyway, they're experiencing high winds, very, very high winds, and I think I heard you mention that last week or toward the weekend, 85-mile-an-hour winds. Is that normal?
Not at all. Not... coming straight out of the north with an Arctic chill. It's got about a foot, 18 inches of snow on the ground, and 17 below and whipping wind. It's literally blizzard warning, and they're shutting down the freeways. You can't see a thing. It's like something you see up in the Yukon.
Well, and what do you think is causing that? What would you say if you were to take an educated guess? What a loaded question, huh?
Well, it's definitely not normal patterns, surely. And there's there's got to be some reason for it, of course. I don't venture to know what the motives behind it, but it is, you know, it is causing concern here, I'm telling you.
Well, I don't know what to wish other than warmer weather. Let's have a little global warming up there in Idaho. Come on, Al. Well, where is he when you need him? You know,
is that? Well, it's just like other places of the globe as well. It's in certain places in Europe last year, and even this entire year, it's been amazingly cool. In many, many parts of the world where it's never been quite this bad before.
Well, aside from the bone-chilling weather that you're experiencing, what else is rattling your cage these days?
Well, Don, we discussed on the show, I had Dr. Castle on, as you might know, on Monday nights. And yeah, I just reiterated the... my experience in historical research into the events 47 years ago on this date, November 22nd, the date of the JFK murder, assassination. The powers that be, you know, did set it up beautifully to have the scapegoat, to have the patsy sit up and to be taken out without having a day in court. We have the Warren Commission established to do nothing but obfuscate and to basically put ointment on the mass consciousness of America. And as I mentioned, it's relevant today, 47 years later, because the same people are doing the same shenanigans with the same blueprint.
Yes. You know? Now, I heard Dr. Castle mention a certain individual who was seen on the scene. Actually, I think he may have accidentally misspoke. He was on the day of the event. We're talking about right after the assassination, when there was law enforcement gathered around the front of the Texas Book Depository. And there's a picture of George H.W. Bush standing there in a trench coat. Of course, he, or maybe it was a suit coat, if I remember, but he's standing there. There's no doubt about it. And he previously said that he doesn't recall where he was that day, which is outrageous. Anybody in this country that was alive and heard that news, was old enough to understand what was being said, knows where they were. They remember exactly where they were and what they were doing. And we know that he was behind it. You had come across one of the gemstone files, of which I'm told there were at least seven. And if would you like to share anything about that for those listeners that haven't heard this information?
Well, sure. I as I explained earlier, if you go on any search engine, there's and just type in John Hankey, H-A-N-K-E-Y, and J-F-K, those three search engines, you'll come up with, at least on Yahoo search engine, it came number one, is a 2007 report that Hankey placed on Jeff Rentz's website. That pretty much tells the entire story, but I'll just kind of give the highlights. In the mid-80s, I was doing financial planning work, and it's basically recruiting people with property and funds to donate their assets into a what's called a charitable remainder unit trust with the in conjunction with the LDS Mormon Church. The way it worked, people with real estate, for instance, would get an appraisal evaluation. They would put this money into this asset into a trust, which would then pay for a whole life insurance policy equal to the asset value, which would give the estate liquidity, in many cases tax-free, tax-exempt liquidity, yet then provide incredible tax breaks while the person's living. So that's basically how it was established. And one of these referrals from the LDS Church, basically.
Okay. One thing that I want to point out is, and I want you to go into a little bit more detail on it, regarding the film that John Hankey did, or the DVD documentary. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty much in agreement with most of it, except for the issue of the Zapruder film. I've seen the enhanced version that Bill Cooper put out, and I don't know if you're familiar with that, but there's a quite an extensive clip that he analyzes William Greer and the gun and all the disinformation out there about the other FBI agent's hair glistening, and that's not a gun, that's his hair shining in the sunlight. He brought out a very clear demonstration of that film, because there were several versions that were out. That pretty much is the only thing that I disagree with. in regard to that. So when you're speaking about, you know, his work, please at least keep that in the back of your mind, because I'm not the only one in that regard. But he may not have been aware of that, even though I did send him a copy and I did discuss it, and he still didn't think it was there. But you can clearly see there's a handgun being fired. So if you want to continue, please go
ahead. Yeah, I don't know about that, and I'm just talking about just the DVD he put out on called JFK, which basically fingered Bush, which basically fingered Hunt, and the work he did putting that together was very much in agreement with the content of that file that I had in my possession. So I viewed the DVD and was stunned at how well he did, you know, his background work. And then, of course, he did a follow-up on JFK 2, which talked about John Kennedy Jr.'s assassination. It's just funny that George W. disappeared off the radar scope from anybody and everybody for that. And that same time, that the time frame in the weekend that John's plane went down, and so it's, I concur completely that it was a complete setup. John Jr. was murdered by W.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had mentioned on a past show that I had located the plane exactly to the tenth of a nautical mile, while CNN was still saying they're searching in a 1,000-square-mile area. And I, in a sense, became a target then, too. And I would submit that I'm in agreement with you as to who was behind that. That was a threat to, and I'm saying JFK Jr., was a threat to Hillary Clinton and possibly even George W. Bush. He could have run for the presidency and probably would have won it. or you know, senator in the state of New York. Same thing. They couldn't have that. They couldn't stand for that. And it's always over money, isn't it?
Well, money and power and control. I was just kind of snowbound today, so we stayed pretty close to the, you know, just kind of turned on TV, and Discovery Channel had a series of films that I had never seen before. One was they pieced together the events of that day on Dealey Plaza with over 30 different people's photographs, not only movie cameras going on, but still shots as well. And the whole hour documentary came to the conclusion that there was definitely more than one shooter. Mm-hmm. And of course, then it followed up with the second hour was basically asking the question, did the mob kill and assassinate Kennedy? And, well, yeah, the CIA is the mob, as far as I'm concerned. You just have to, you know, and this documentary brought this out very well. The CIA would be employing, and I'm sure they still do, many of the CIA professional hitmen to go out and do their dirty work, assassinate heads of state, et cetera, as they need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interconnected, as you know.
Yeah. In that report that you had come across, the Gemstone file, I forget, was that number 3?
Number 5 of 7.
Number 5, okay. Pardon me for that, but I did have to clarify that. What was the gist of what was in there? Did it mention all the conspirators for instance, at the, I understand there was a meeting at the Clint Murchison home.
Well, yeah, I didn't take notes. It's been well over a decade since I read it. And I read it just one time through, Don. I knew it was dynamite. I knew it was, you know, if it was true, it was absolutely a smoking gun of strong evidence. It most definitely incriminated Herbert Walker Bush, Hunt, even Governor Connally, but more importantly, showing the motivation for it. Okay, the motive for the assassination, and sadly, it was, you know, this Jewish run mafioso, the Meyer Lansky crowd, that was deeply, deeply, deeply involved in this, and also involved the Mormon Church officials in Salt Lake City because of some, you know, the money arrangements that they had with the Jewish mafia boys.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I couldn't believe what I was reading. I'm sitting here at the time just stunned, thinking this is a hatchet job on my beloved church and my iconic GOP leadership. I mean, I campaigned hard and long for Bush back, you know, in his day and from in 1988. I thought it, you know, was a tragedy when Clinton was able to win the 92 election, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So when I read this, I really didn't keep detailed notes, but I did. The basic gist of it, Don, was that Batista was definitely in cahoots, wanted to turn Havana into this mecca of gambling and prostitution and drugs.
Yeah, another Vegas.
But, well, it was designed to be the big, big place.
Yeah.
You know, when Castro overthrew Batista and the first thing he did was basically like Christ in the temple, just routed him out. Just shut off all the organized crime activity there, and it became, you know, the dream became a wasteland. They were forced then to go into Las Vegas, which is where this gentleman knew and lived, knew the players, and basically had this file of evidentiary documents.
Yes. Now this, when you mention Meyer Lansky, what comes to mind, at least in my mind, is the movie The Godfather, and how they show. Although the character in that is not Meyer Lansky, it's sort of mirroring this whole scenario that you're describing in that movie. So there's a lot of truth in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have sort of a parallel path going on between the Corleone crime family and the Vatican as well.
Yeah, don't forget the P2 Lodge,
mm-hmm.
of Freemasonry. Between the Jewish B'nai B'rith and the P2 Lodge of Italy, I mean, that's pretty much the society. That's the apex point of the pyramid, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And now, was there much discussion about Cuba in those documents, to the best of your recollection, beyond, you know, what you've mentioned already?
Well, of course, the powers that be, the mafia heads, which also, of course, included the CIA of Dulles. Herbert Walker Bush was a CIA operative who eventually, right shortly after the assassination, he sent it to the top Post, was head of the CIA. I think that's very significant. Also, the anti-Castro Cuban exiles in Florida and into New Orleans, Louisiana, were very much up, you know, up in arms over what they deemed to be a betrayal on the part of Kennedy, following the Bay of Pigs fiasco. But again, yeah, this file went in to explain that the Soviet Union, the Bolshevik Jews, okay, again, right there, didn't want to see Cuba become such an independent icon. There's a reason for Khrushchev and the Soviets coming in and putting the missiles in and causing that whole furor. So Kennedy was really trying to walk a tightrope, not have nuclear exchanges and the Holocaust happening, when at the same breath you have Dulles and the Mafia boys trying to undercut him. I can understand completely, and this is the file explained this, that Kennedy said this country has got to be put back to the rule of law of the public. It's not being run by a secret society cabal behind the scenes, a secret society, secret conspiracy. And that's the speech he gave that's so well done, where he said there is a secret monolithic conspiracy. That's what he was referring to.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many things that come to mind. Were you aware that Fidel Castro, prior to this coup to overthrow the Batista government in Cuba, was drafted by the New York Yankees to pitch in American League Baseball? You aware of that?
Well, I wonder if that was the Yankee cap he exchanged for his military cap.
Yeah.
I had heard that. I had not verified that or knew that to be a true fact, but why not?
Yeah, he was drafted and I think even signed with them, and then all of a sudden everything changed. But you didn't hear about that anymore after the fact. But yes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought you were finished up, but I've always wondered throughout this whole time frame of the Bay of Pigs, the debacle, the disaster there. What does the military base there in Guantanamo Bay have to do with all this? Why, if Cuba's this terrible dictatorship, anti-American hatred, why did they allow an American military base with Marines on full alert there? I mean, it's...
I think you'd have to ask the city of London about that.
No, I watched, again, one of my favorite movies is A Few Good Men with Tom Cruise. That's an amazing true story, and it continues to this day. We have these terrorists, so-called, these Islamic Al-Qaeda terrorists housed there. And why Cuba? Why Guantanamo Bay? It's incongruous to me.
Yeah, and you know, I get these emails from foreign countries, from people that are at least posing as if they're Arabic, even sometimes stating, making Muslim statements. And most of the time, they're quite pleasant emails. They're wishing me the best, and they're telling me that they want my information. They want to go into business with me. They have somewhere between $8 and $12 million that a former client of their bank left. They died, and because it belongs to a foreigner, they have to pick someone, so they pick me. This doesn't sound like terrorism. They're offering to go into a 50-50 partnership sometimes. you know the email I'm talking about, and I'm being a bit tongue-in-cheek, of course.
Right.
But
right.
But these are the people who are supposed to be the terrorists. Well, they're trying to scam us, for one thing. But, you know, I would even venture to guess that all of that stuff is coming from the CIA anyway. CIA, NSA, and all their operatives. What say you about that?
Well, I think so. Again, it goes back to the Washington Post series of articles on top secret America. And I'd like to just again plug their website, topsecretamerica.com, where they show the incredible meteoric rise in spending and employment in the so-called security industry now. I mean, since, you know, post 9/11, this thing is just like a snowball rolling down the hill. It's crazy. The TSA bullies, the SS Gestapo type of thing, show me your papers, setting up these body scanners and patting people down. Not all, but I'm sure many get a perverse joy to get their jollies out of doing such a thing. What has America become? If we were to take a picture of this, these shakedown, pat downs, full body scanners 25 years ago, Don, I would dare say nobody would say this was America. They would think it's more Nazi Germany.
Well, we can just read the history, and we see the mirrored examples. They're literally following that as a roadmap. The same things that Hitler did, and again, we had the city of London behind the scenes pulling the purse strings, and the banks in New York funneling cash, funneling technology, outright stealing military secrets. This is all done by design. You see, the pretext for the wars is just for them to make a lot of money. That's all it is. That's all it's ever been, and that's all it ever will be until that those veins and arteries are cut off. That was sort of the thing that Kennedy was fighting against, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, indeed. And I've had this discussion with a number of colleagues, a couple of pastors. My friend Dane Phillips, he asked me, he said, how many presidents do you think were puppets? And when it first began, I said, well, obviously the really truly last independent president we had was Abraham Lincoln. He was adamant about not going under the City of London bankers' wings, or even realized when he realized, of course, that the Rothschild arm of the French banks had funded the Confederate States, and they were under a pretty onerous baggage of debt as well. The entire plot would be to again reduce America to the feudal serfdom status of the lords of the manor and the barons and the role of feudal Europe. England was the, you know, the barons would, or the king would give land to the titles of nobility to those that were completely sworn allies with the king. These blocks of land would be basically worked by the peasants and the serfs, who were kept ignorant. They weren't allowed by law. They were it was illegal for them to learn to read or write or become educated, especially in the ways of the Christian truths of the New Testament. The New Testament, if you remember, was kept solely in the hands of those of the church clergy.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that happening after the Civil War, the installation of the mill levies, the property taxation, the carpetbaggers, which raised the South. And from that point in time, as you know, Don, we basically have no pure title to the land that we're on. We are just only allowed to keep our real estate intact and our homes and everything if we pay Caesar the mill levy.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I can ask a question, and I know that you did a lot of research on this, knowing that Paul Warburg was both the, let's say, the director or manager of the London and Paris Rothschild banks, do you think that he may have been the author of this mill levy concept?
Well, yeah, that's what, if you look at the definition of a mill, M-I-L or M-I-L-L, either one in the terms of this taxation.
Or M-I-L-L-E in French, mia.
Mille, yeah. Mia. Yeah, it literally is 1/1,000th of a British pound sterling. Well, isn't that funny that we have the equivalent in a U.S. dollar? But it's, why would they not call it a U.S. dollar tax or a grain tax, whatever? No, it's a mill levy as a basis of standard of the standard British pound. So obviously the enactment of these property taxes following the Civil War was to repay the British City of London bankers for the Civil War. Lincoln proposed just to, again, place the treasury to repay it with greenbacks, American legitimate dollar bills. And that's, of course, why he was taken out and assassinated.
Do you think he was ignorant of the ancient Virginia Company agreement and the New England Company contracts that were struck with King George III?
Well, I think Lincoln became fully aware of all this, maybe not during his first campaign, but most definitely by the time his second campaign rolled around, he understood by experience who the vipers were, just as Andrew Jackson had proclaimed in the 1830s.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's a lot of evidence that's come out that says that John Wilkes Booth was just another patsy, like Lee Harvey Oswald in the Kennedy assassination. Even forensic evidence that he had been shot at close range by what might or must have been a ladies' derringer owned by one Mary Todd Lincoln, who sat at his left. It's kind of an interesting tidbit there. I don't know if you'd heard of that, but it makes sense.
Well, John Wilkes Booth was most definitely employed by the House of Rothschild. There's no doubt about that. And Drew Raines explained what he knew about the Andrew Jackson fiasco. Andrew Jackson was had numerous assassination attempts on him. And in fact, one of the would-be assassins which was arrested, he was the father of John Wilkes Booth.
Hmm.
So there, and he was again the same employment. He was a thespian play, an actor,
mm-hmm.
in the play guild. He was Definitely, when he was arrested, he was protected and brought back to England under, you know, the highest protection of the Bank of London. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there that points again to the bankers of the Rothschild cabal.
And then you have this more than coincidental anomaly that Lincoln was assassinated in the Ford Theater, and Lee Harvey Oswald was chased into a theater where Officer J.D. Tippit was murdered. And, of course, that was blamed on Oswald as well. It's quite possible that that they didn't want any interference with the Patsy, you know, to carry the rest of it out. But what we were told and what we saw on TV were two different things. I saw Oswald go, ah, you know, with his mouth wide open. Didn't see any blood stains, nothing like that. They quickly surrounded him so the cameras couldn't see what had gone on. And I had heard that they actually put him in an ambulance, and the CIA did away with him in the ambulance. And then sometime later, they gave Jack Ruby cancer and got rid of him. But these, and I don't mean to digress other than to, you know, sort of revisit some of the strange goings-on there, that both assassinations in some respect involved the theater, almost if this is a ritual being carried out.
Yeah, and again, that the Discovery Channel documentary that I watched was amazing, tying the pieces together with the mob based on what Guinness File pointed out as well. Whoever did that documentary was right, absolutely right on point. It involves so many factions of even, you know, the Nazis that came over under Operation Paperclip. There's a fantastic book done by an independent author named Edward Haslam that's called Dr. Mary's Monkey. This is amazing part of this whole puzzle, explaining the death of Dr. Mary Sherman, how she was brutally murdered because she had uncovered, I think, the secret of the research in the cancer research labs there at Tulane University. Flat out amazing how Lee Harvey Oswald was employed by the same company as this, what's his name, Ferry, that his last name is Ferry, I forget his first name, that was prominently featured in the work there of Dr. Mary Sherman, who was murdered. It's an integral explanation of really the players that were involved and are involved to this day.
Yes, fascinating stuff. Here we are now. This is another anniversary. The reason we're talking about this, of course, is because the assassination of John F. Kennedy occurred on November 22nd, 1963. And so it's an anniversary, that's for sure.
And that I just like to add that America, and this was pointed out in these documentaries on Discovery Channel, America lost its innocence at that point. We realized that America's not a safe place, and more importantly, if those that really have eyes to see and ears to hear and really can dig, can realize that what happened on November 22nd of 1963, the same script was played out to its, to a perfect structure again in September 11th. You have the a horrible terror-producing incident that is videotaped and broadcast not only in America but worldwide. The whole world psyche is affected by the footage. You have a powerful commission for him to investigate quickly and come up with an official case closed, supposedly scientifically evidentiary conclusion. Well, in reality, it's all controlled opposition, controlled disinformation. You have, of course, the Warren Commission, and you have, again, the 9/11 Commission. How truthful can it be when the original 9/11 Commission was headed by none other than our good friend Henry Kissinger?
Yes. Now, I did some quick checking here, if I may do that. I do that sometimes, you know. I call it live research on the radio research. You were speaking about David Ferry.
Yes.
And David Ferry, interestingly, now this connects some dots here, I have to tell you. And I haven't seen anyone write this, but there was a man who was wearing a straw hat during the investigation headed by Arlen Specter when he came up with the single bullet theory. This was conducted both in a garage, let's say like an auto body garage, or it could have been a city or government garage, and they took a series of pictures. This individual is in that picture. He hails from Cleveland, Ohio, but I determined that his birth certificate was fictitious. He was an infiltrator, okay, from a foreign government.
Uh-huh.
And he was connected. This may have even had something to do with the Sam Shepard murder, because I believe there was a group of Satanists that operated out of that area. And the guy's name I'm speaking about is Harry Landsberg. And he was a meteorologist who happened to win some kind of a big award for meteorology and astronomy from NASA somewhere around the time of the assassination. I don't exactly recall if it was prior to or after. I think it was afterward. And David Ferry, attended college at Baldwin Wallace. That's near Cleveland. Went to St. Ignatius High School, John Carroll University, St. Mary's Seminary, studied priesthood. And so they're the relationships, these are all high powered schools in the area, especially in the Catholic community. But because it's of the Catholic faith doesn't mean that these people weren't Satanists. We know they practice Satanism in the Vatican. So why not in these other areas? But Jim Garrison was able to make a connection. And Ferry himself must have had something to do with this group. Harry Landsberg ends up in two places in photos, in a garage, where they were conducting measurements for the cameras. And then they came up with single bullet theory in Dealey Plaza there. They transported that vehicle there and were looking at alignments of the windows and all of that. But, of course, they weren't talking about all the hitmen that were standing in the grassy knoll, in the sewers, and on both sides of the street, front and back, basically. Mm-hmm. So all of that evidence is disregarded, and instead this idiotic, insane single bullet theory was proffered by Specter and his group. I find it highly interesting that Landsberg's wife, who herself, though she claimed to be born in Indiana, her birth certificate was fictitious as well. And these are the old style certificates of live birth. They don't add up whatsoever. And he had made repeated trips to Florida. He ended up afterwards moving to Florida, and his daughter, who is on the run for her life because they tried to institutionalize her. She had calculated that or determined that that was her father in those photos. So she knew that her father had something to do with the cover-up. Very strange individual, but he goes back to Germany. He was a professor of meteorology in Germany as well, in the Frankfurt area. So this is some research that I did that sort of ties all these people together, and especially David Ferry. You mentioned Mary Sherman, Dr. Mary Sherman. When she died, it was determined that it was a murder. And I'm going to read a quote from this, okay? The police report classified the death as a murder. The autopsy report said her right arm and rib cage had been burned away, yet the hair on her head remained unburned. A small fire had been set in her apartment, which burned the mattress and some underwear, but no witness reported seeing a flame. The body had been stabbed in the heart, liver, arm, leg, and stomach. The wound to the heart was determined to be the precise cause of death. The wound hemorrhaged, but the wound to the liver did not, indicating that she was alive at the time of the heart wound, but already dead by the time the wound to the liver was inflicted. Investigators determined that the massive burns inflicted upon her could not have occurred in her apartment. The details of her missing arm were not released to the public. Now, what do you suppose that means? That they found her missing arm, or that they know who committed this murder?
Yeah, that's what Edward Haslam in the book Dr. Mary's Monkey discloses. There at Tulane University is a cancer research facility. They had a particle accelerator that the burns that were inflicted on her were consistent with her being placed in harm's way with that particle accelerator. The missing arm wasn't dismemberment, Don. It was that it was just reduced to below ash. I mean, it was just burnt to nothing. And it was, again, she was forced to go into the particle accelerator.
So then this murder was intended to be staged to look like she lost her arm in a fire.
Yeah. There was the burns were so massive that there was it had to be a high energy beam that she was placed in, and of course, the Haslam explains the players that were there. Imagine here's David Ferry working with Mary Sherman, here's Lee Harvey Oswald, all these other names that were tied to this research facility in Tulane. Well, these names, when you start digging, they are tied to the American Cancer Society, the Operation Paperclip scientists of Nazi Germany came and were placed into positions with all of this. So there, it ties back to Prescott Bush once again, and that whole Bush CIA Alan Dulles secret treaty of Fort Hunt information. See how it all links together?
Mm-hmm. And then there's George de Morenschild, who was from a wealthy Russian family, Zionist family, came here as a sort of a mentor or maybe a handler for Lee Harvey Oswald. You don't hear his name mentioned much, but I understand that he was the likely person to have facilitated the paperwork that was given to the two Connecticut senators who signed the papers that enabled Lee Harvey Oswald to come into the United States. And one of them was Prescott Bush. The other, can't remember his first name, I think, is John. I want to say John Connor, but I may be totally wrong on that, so I won't say John Connor. But But nonetheless, and then DeMorenshield himself ends up with a gunshot wound to his mouth. And he wasn't large enough to actually hold the gun and extend it that far. But that's how those things happen.
Well, there's also a part of that, the Dr. Mary's Monkey book that raises some pretty interesting questions that there may well have been more than one Lee Harvey Oswald. Okay, there's some strong evidence that there were some multiples, some doubles that looked just like him operating as well.
Now, in those days, and I'll back that statement up with this, in those days, there was a picture that was brought before Congress. There were some hearings, and it was a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald standing what looked like in a courtyard that was surrounded with a picket fence. He's standing inside the picket fence. On the other side of the picket fence is a building. And I think this was one of the first, we didn't have Photoshop in those days, but we used the term Photoshop to compile a picture. But it was a compiled picture. And it was supposed to represent Lee Harvey Oswald posing with a rifle and two newspapers tucked between the rifle and his chest. Well, upon further examination, I determined that his image was inserted into a photograph of this building, and none of the shadows move in the right direction in this picture. Shadows are missing where they should be, where they exist. They're going to the right, and one part of the picture they're going to the left. Sunlight doesn't work like that. But the biggest tip-off is the newspaper. There's no print on it, on these two newspapers. Now, Congress examined this and didn't see this. Are you telling me that? That the FBI may have examined that? Or, you know, at least alleged that they had examined this photo of Lee Harvey Oswald? It was totally fabricated to support this idea that he was some kind of militant bent on assassinating the president, when all the evidence shows otherwise. Any comment?
Well, yeah, and then you look at the same players that Haslam, you know, shows in his book. You follow them as you know, Don, and it comes out to such people as the Dunhams, Stanley Ann. Stand on them. It's such a small circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, they weren't in Kansas. They may have been camping out in Kansas at that time.
Yeah.
More likely, they were in Denison, Texas.
Sure. Yeah, very, very likely. And of course, we go back to that photograph of Stanley Ann Dunham on the beach in Waikiki in July of the year she's supposed to be pregnant, 8 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? And they have verified that's actually a true picture. So where does he come from? Was he just cloned, or was it an adopted baby that the Dunhams were taking care of, or was he the actual son of Mrs. Dunham, who, you know, had some strange assignments with the Black Panthers and Malcolm X?
Yeah, I've heard you speak about that. I have to politely disagree, but, you know, I mean, it's something to consider. Of course, we're looking at all the possibilities. He looks like a lot of other people too. If you put some freckles on him, he looks like Howdy Doody, especially the ears.
Well, he's made of wood, maybe. But yeah, you know, the biggest smoking gun is that the picture. This is put out by Stanley Ann's closest, you know, friends that visited her there in that's, you know, somewhere on Waikiki Beach.
Mm-hmm.
That's, she's clearly not pregnant. Clearly pregnant.
Yeah. Now she's alleged to have made a statement to one of her high school chums who she allegedly visited. Well, she would have been at the University of Washington during that time. She was enrolled there, and she made the comment, I'm able to have a baby without getting married and without having sex. That was a very off-the-wall comment that she would have made to somebody, unless it's just total CIA disinformation. But aside from that picture you just mentioned, there were three other photos, one which had the inscription YA-438.
Uh-huh.
And I had spent 6 months searching for the to break that code. And then one day I just realized the YA stood for Yugoslavia. And when I entered the word Yugoslavia-438 into a search engine, up came a list of passengers. And on the line 438 was one Sophia Maduna. And above her was Magdalena, like Madeline, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Magdalena Maduna. And then misspelled Friedrich. But nonetheless, these were aliases that they used. This was supposedly a rescue of some incarcerated war victims at the Bagnoli camp. Made up name. There is a Bagnola, Italy, but there is no Bagnoli, and there was no Bagnoli camp where they released or freed these concentration camp victims in 1950, 5 years after the end of the war. I mean, there was a lot of murder going on afterwards that's been obfuscated from the history books, but we know that they were, at least in 1950, they were on a ship or they were on a list of spies. And it cross-references in many, many strange ways. It ties into Texas. In fact, Magdalena Maduna is registered as being married in the state of Texas, too.
Well, there you go.
Okay. So was she really married to Stanley Armour Dunham, or is that just on paper? You see, they were scheming. They were doing all this real estate corruption way back then, even during and prior to the Eisenhower administration, way before that, 1942. While the war was still going on, they were infiltrating, and I have the documents that show that massive amounts of money were being skimmed out of federal programs. The Veterans Administration, one of the biggest targets. And I have the letters. I have the actual letters. It's a miracle that these were discovered, because the building in which the file cabinet that contained these documents was in was burned to the ground. And that file cabinet was put out on the street, and it was realized that there were some important documents. Some were lost. Some were pawned off or auctioned off, like on eBay, for example. But out of the remaining ones, which were some 33 documents, there's that number 33, was pretty incriminating. So we know sort of how they put this together. And they set up this network of banks. They did this in the Seattle area. They did this in Los Angeles, San Francisco. At the turn of the 20th century, Charles Reed Bishop was doing that. So when this was set up to sort of secretly operate out of Hawaii, you had the drug companies coming in, buying up the banks, and basically putting this whole machine together that we still have to deal with today. Is it any surprise? And all the dots connect.
I do. Well, who's next? Let's see, that's the next. Who's going to who's going to replace the usurper in the White House. Will he be impeached? You know, I reported on this tonight as well. The articles of impeachment have been prepared and are on file, waiting for the new Congress to look at them. So we can only hope that he's taken out of office.
Now, this is sort of a gratuitous kind of act when there is a big turnover in the balance of power in the House or the Senate. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is more just kowtowing to that tradition, or do you think something more is going to be done?
Well, I hope there's something more. I hope it's just not some little symbolism going on. You know, I don't know if we can survive another 2 years with this guy and without America's getting back to the basic precepts of God and justice. It's just amazing how far down we've come in just 2 years.
Well, I think we have to simultaneously press for nullification of all of these draconian laws, which are just serving a criminal element. They serve no purpose in any legitimate government anywhere on the planet.
Not at all. Only if you're going to go in full-fledged communism/socialism that would make Khrushchev proud. So that's where it's at. And, well, it's been a great show, Don. It's looking
yes.
Time has really flown by.
Yes. Give out your website information, if you would, and any information about your show tomorrow or the day after.
Well, we'll be talking about the battlehymn.com information there. There's always new things coming on that website. I do collaborate with them quite a bit on that. That's battlehymn.com, www.atrueot is my personal blog. I apologize the last 10 days. I've had problems with my computer, and I've been traveling, so hasn't had a lot of updates, but we're keeping abreast as much as we can, Don, and appreciate all the work you're doing and that all the time.
Everybody's keeping me busy.
Yes.
What can I say? You know, and I'm trying to keep busy with my own things, but I keep getting pulled aside. Anyway, it's been great having you on. I want to wish you a very happy and prosperous, if those are the appropriate, and peaceful Thanksgiving holiday, and I look forward to your next visit on Evident Footprints next Monday.
Thank you, Don. God bless, and same to you. Good night.
Okay. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Dr. A. Truat. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting the show, as well as on the sound tonight, Seth Hendrick, in the studios. I know we had a problem. I'm told, by the way, those of you from all the Wind Talkers stations around the world, the archive should be okay. So if you want to try to grab the archive off of the site, that's probably the best way. There was no interruption, just an issue with the stream. Seth told me that, so I'm trusting that he had that part right. Over at BBS Radio, I also want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be Dr. Michael Castle. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.